Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues here on AFR, American Family Radio, for Wednesday, December the 2nd. And we thank you for listening to AFR. Well, let's see here. We have a three-person panel to give you insights, wisdom, knowledge, and a plethora of other things that I can't think of exactly right now. Fred Jackson's in studio.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brother Fred. How are you?
I'm doing well. You want a weather forecast?
I do, Fred. Lay it on
weather
me.
Weather anomalies.
Weather anomalies. Okay.
Last evening. Uh-huh. I like checking weather at various places. Last evening in Anchorage, Alaska, while we were freezing here, it's 39 degrees and rainy.
Yeah.
In Orlando, Florida, only 9 degrees warmer than Anchorage, Alaska. It was 48 degrees in Orlando.
That is a weather anomaly. Ed Battagliano, explain that one to us.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in, but I hadn't been introduced.
Yeah, so. I wanted to formally introduce you, and I would give your whole pedigree, but
I can't. I'll tell you, it's a Canadian vortex. The old Canadian vortex that swoops down.
That sounds like a spell or something that Canada's cast on us. You're right, though. You know, that was really
9 degrees.
So
difference.
Orlando is. So we fly. If you want to fly your family from Anchorage to Orlando,
yeah, we're going to warm climate.
We're going to Orlando. We're going to go to all the theme parks.
Bring your shorts, yeah. Your swim trunks.
No, it's only 48 degrees in Orlando, Florida.
Yeah. 48.
You know, I did see that. Isn't it funny though? I don't know if funny is the right word. The older you get, the more you pay attention to the weather. I don't know what the deal is on that, but it's just like
it's absolutely true. I was just telling someone here this week because it's turned real cold down and throughout the South, and our flagship station for our network is here in Tupelo, Mississippi. If you're just tuning in and don't know anything about us, and I was just telling someone, I said I grew up in New England. I have loved cold weather since I was just a tot. And fell asleep in the snow when I was 4 years old. My mom couldn't find me. I had fallen asleep in the snow in the backyard. But 5 years ago, roughly, I started thinking, it is cold. And I started realizing this is why people from up north retire down in Florida. I said, I don't think I like the cold anymore.
I don't have to live like this.
Yes. Come on, man.
Oh, man. With all due respect to our good friends in the upper Midwest, I've said before to my wife, because I detest cold weather, that I would rather be homeless in Miami than have a home in Minnesota in January.
Yes.
Okay. Give me Minnesota, because I've been. Give me Minnesota May to October.
May 15th through
right.
May 30th.
I get a kick this time of the year. You know, you go to the stores to buy Christmas cards.
Right.
And you have the, Norman Rockwell look.
Yeah.
You know, you have the house with the smoke curling out of the chimney.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And all the snow around. And people go, oh, isn't that so nice? I said, yeah.
For a couple of hours.
How about that picture in April?
Yes.
And that snow is still there, and you're still shoveling.
Yes. The guy who used to have to shovel around my dad got a snow blower when I went to college. I had to shovel snow off our driveway my whole life.
I'm sensing that months and months of winter will affect your attitude toward life.
Oh, yeah.
Still affects us.
I did have a friend do that a few years ago. I had a friend from Minnesota, and he just said, you know, I can't do this anymore. And he said, I'm moving to Memphis at least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To get away from the harsh winters of the upper Midwest.
It's rough.
I don't see how the folks do it. I really don't. But
it's tough.
I guess you adjust to some extent. All right, we got so much to talk about. David Barton, will be with us at the bottom of the hour, as will Abraham Hamilton III. And what we're going to talk about for half an hour there is all these this information that's coming out now about eyewitnesses to voter fraud and what the pathway may be for the president's legal team. And David, he sent me an email last night. Man, that guy's just full of insights and insider information. And so he's going to be with us. We look forward to talking to David Barton. So that's coming up at the bottom of the hour. If you want to join us on Ed Calls It That There Internet, you can go to Facebook or YouTube and just type in Today's Issues, and you can are we live video streaming today? Okay, we've had some internet issues, but we are live video streaming on Facebook and YouTube. Just type in Today's Issues, and we will be posting the stories. We post a lot of good stuff at our Facebook page, Today's Issues, not just during the show, but interesting stuff, informative information. I wonder if I just...
As opposed to the other kind.
Yeah, I don't know if I just... That wasn't a double negative. Maybe I just used a double positive, I think, right there. But so...
Well, you shouldn't not do it.
Duly noted, Mr. English, Mr. Englishman, Professor. Englishman, Professor. Wow. I'm on a roll. All right, Fred.
All right.
Take us to the news desk.
Yes. Well, yesterday, late yesterday afternoon, and we'll talk a little bit more about this when Abe gets here, I guess, the Attorney General of the United States, Mr. Barr, was quoted by the Associated Press as saying, I remember I got the headline here. Here's the AP headline. Barr, no evidence of fraud that change election outcome. That would change election outcome.
That was the Associated Press headline.
That was the headline yesterday afternoon. What they left out of that headline were a couple of important words. And they actually had these words further down in the story. They quoted the Attorney General as saying, quote, to date, we have not seen fraud on a scale that could have affected a different outcome in the election, Barr told the AP. To date. That's a whole lot different from a headline that says there is no evidence of fraud out there.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to change the election.
Yeah. Yeah, so, there was a lot of people yesterday afternoon because I saw some emails and tweets and and got a text or two. There were a lot of people upset, angry with Attorney General Barr for saying that.
Mm.
But then as it turns out, as you say, Fred, that's not exactly what he said. That is, there's no evidence of fraud. He's saying... We're still basically saying if there is evidence, we're going to still pursue it.
Yes.
But we haven't found anything to date that would change the election results. That's basically what he was saying. Now, people may take issue with that, but he's not saying he's disregarding it.
No.
Altogether. And let me just say this, too, about William Barr, and I've been a big fan of his. I really have. A couple of speeches that he's given were wonderful, where he completely understands the worldview. Clash that's going on in our country. He's not just a Republican or not just a conservative. He understands God versus evil here that's going on in our country. But in fairness to him, he has to be really careful about his words, as careful as the President of the United States. And we know President Trump sometimes doesn't have the word careful in his vocabulary. I love the guy, but sometimes he does things and says things. You go, why did you say that out loud?
Right.
But anyway, William Barr, he can't do that. He's the top law enforcement officer in the country, except the president, but as far in the Justice Department. So he can't just go out there and need to do a lot of talking anyway. But you understand what I'm saying? So.
Yeah, he can't, even if the Department of Justice, and they're not the only ones investigating, you know, allegations of fraud. The president's own, legal team is doing that as well. But
right.
He can't, can you imagine the chaos that could be created if Attorney General Barr said, yeah, we found it. This election was, it was a fraud. You can't do that. So I take him as being precise, because that's what lawyers generally try to be, like you're talking about. I think he was trying to be precise in what he's saying. And we have come to find out that you cannot trust 95% of what the news media puts out there. You just can't trust it. Fred, I know over, you know, across the street with One News Now, for example, and our own newscasts, which come, some of it comes through the Associated Press.
Yes.
It constantly has to be revamped because of the clear bias that are that appear appears regularly in news stories and headlines.
Yeah. And you know, the bias has always been there. There's no question about it. But I've not seen it to this extent since Donald Trump was elected president. You know, there was a Harvard study. I was listening to this morning. There was a Harvard study that looked at the first 100 days of President Trump's presidency. Now, the first 100 days is normally a honeymoon period.
Now, is that from the inauguration or from the election?
From the inauguration.
Okay.
Okay, 100 days, first 100 days. Harvard, liberal, they did a study on the news media coverage of the newly elected president. 93% of the stories were negative.
Right.
In what is traditionally the honeymoon period.
Right.
They haven't a chance, really, to, you know, really affect the nation with policy and all that sort of thing. 93%, right from the get-go, they were out to get Trump.
And the good thing was, though, that as his administration wore on, that percentage decreased greatly, didn't it? Didn't it?
Hey, I was talking, Allison, my wife and I were talking about this last night about Trump and the media and so forth, and there's some of the things that President Trump says. Let me just, when President Trump was ran for office and was elected, I personally think that he did it because he loved this country, and he genuinely wanted to do things to make America great again, to restore a sense of patriotism and pride in our country, to bring business and commerce back that had been transferred overseas for reasons that he thought were unnecessary, thought China was taking advantage of us. And also, he so that was his motivation, his chief motivation, I think. And he saw a lot of things that he could change, the NAFTA deals, controlling the border. And, you know, ideas that you would think, absent a hostile liberal media and Democrat Party, are just common sense things that vast majority of Americans would agree on. Mm-hmm. Who's against making sure we know who's coming into our country?
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Who's against changing a trade imbalance with China that's been harmful to our businesses and our economy, for example? So those kinds of things, that restoring a sense of patriotism and love for our country. And he was attacked from before he ever got into office, just viciously. And they spied on his campaign. We know that now, illegitimately. Mm-hmm. That the FBI getting rid of Michael Flynn, setting him up,
leaking the conversations that the president had with leaders of foreign governments,
using a dossier that was paid for by Hillary Clinton's campaign, which was tawdry and just a book of fiction. And our own FBI uses that and Adam Schiff to go after the president as having some kind of a Russian collusion connection, just stuff of novels, you know, that you, and so you start to think to yourself, if I'm in his position, that is Donald Trump's, I'm a billionaire. Life is pretty good. I got hotels and golf courses and all over the world. I got a great family. Who needs?
Right.
Who needs? So I think his motivation was, as I said, stated earlier, but then to start getting these, I think he was probably surprised, quite frankly, at the hostility of the press and of the Democrats and the quote progressives. And then we learned, you know, he was, upsetting the globalist when he starts talking about, listen, NATO, you countries, you've been taking advantage of us. We've been paying for all your defense. It's time for you guys to pay up.
Right.
Well, when he does that, then it's a, oh, my goodness, he's a white nationalist. You know what I'm saying? Well, he is white, and he is a nationalist, I guess, which I think are a nationalist is a good thing. It's a positive thing. It was portrayed as something that was evil.
Right.
Okay, and wicked. And then he started being called Hitler and a Nazi leader by so the left just started losing their minds every day. Their hair was on fire because of something the president had said or done. And, of course, he's not the kind that takes it sitting down like other former Republicans.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you punch him, he punches you back.
Yeah.
Okay. If you hit him below the belt, he hits you below the belt.
Right.
Okay. So that's just the way, I guess, he's always operated as a New York businessman. You've explained this before, mm-hmm. Ed. You have to be the rough and rumble of that kind of lifestyle that he lived. So, but I'm just saying that you would develop a paranoia. I don't think it's almost unavoidable. Hey, looking around going, the deep state, who's with me? Who's spying on us?
Right.
You cited early on in his campaign, you got leaks out the wazoo.
Right. No, that was very unusual for a president coming in with a brand new administration. We're also talking about he got the country, the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Accords, not because he was against, you know,
clean water and pure air,
but he said, well, China and India aren't going to be participating. These climate accords are going to punish our economy, mm-hmm. while these two huge growing economies are going to do nothing for the next 30 years. I'm not going to have that. I'm not going to trash our economy. And again, the globalists went crazy.
Yeah, and the environmentalists then said, see there, you're for polluting the planet.
Yes.
Yeah, that isn't what he said at all.
Right.
Anyway, go ahead.
I just think his victory, though, in 2016 has had this benefit. It has brought out the true motivation of the far left.
Yeah.
I mean,
it smoked them out.
It smoked them out.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's a good way to put it. Because the globalists, like the John Kerry's and the Barack Obama, has been around for a long time. Barack Obama told us, going to change the country, going to change the world. Donald Trump comes in, and he upset the apple cart. He got in the way. And so
he threw the apple cart over the cliff.
That's
right.
That's what he, that's
and
what
kept
he did.
All the apples.
Kept all the apples.
Good one, Ed.
Yeah.
Good one.
So he comes in, and he interferes with that agenda. And what happened was their real left-wing radical agenda comes to the surface. The mainstream media is part of this. If there's any doubt that the mainstream media is far left in its ideology, that's gone now. That is totally out the window. We know where the mainstream media stands. We know where the Democratic Party stands.
Big social.
And the far left, you know, big Facebook, Twitter. We know now, without a shadow of a doubt, where all these people are coming from. There is no excuse. You can't say you're ignorant now.
Right.
You can't say, well, maybe I'm just misunderstanding the media. No, no, no. Now you understand.
And there's no middle ground.
No. No, there's no gray area here.
Right.
So at least people now understand.
I just don't believe that the president would have developed a contentious reputation. Mm. If not for these unfair, relentless attacks.
Yes.
Some are, listen, we all make mistakes. We all make bad decisions from time to time, even if you're the president. Or you say things maybe you regret, you hire people you wished you wouldn't. Those things are going to happen along the way. But what happened with the left-wing media and the Democrats and the globalists and the, quote, progressives and Hollywood and all them is they went after him with a vengeance. And it didn't care. They didn't care that things were made up or fraudulent or unfair. They wanted to bring he and his administration down, mm-hmm. From before he even took office. Mm-hmm. And I think it so ticked them off that Hillary Clinton didn't win. Mm-hmm. And then we got this New York businessman who just shoots off his mouth. They were thinking who's going to embarrass us on the international stage. And but I think probably more than his personality, as Sandy said, it's his policies that they detested. And so what I'm saying is when you're a human being and people go after you every day, all day, even if you're the president, and then you couple that with the deep state. And by deep state, I mean all those people that were working in the federal government for all these agencies that were a part of the administrative branch, right, then under the direction of the White House. But then all the president really can appoint are the heads of those organizations.
Right.
But underneath the heads of those organizations are a whole lot of people that are hostile to your agenda. Now, they're not going to go into, to the head of their office and say, hey, your boss, our boss, I hate his guts,
right.
And I voted against him, and I'm going to undermine him at every point. Have a nice day.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So is he having to worry about all this, trying to find out who do I trust? So anyway,
but I think the other thing that happened about a year ago, the far left understood that their hate campaign against Trump wasn't working.
Okay,
it wasn't working. Because they saw the surge of popularity for this president. They saw the unemployment numbers. Remember back in the spring? Lowest they've ever been for black Americans.
Oh, before COVID?
Yes.
Oh, before COVID. If we wouldn't have had COVID, I'm thinking he would have sailed into office.
Right.
So they saw all of this. And even with COVID, his response was right. He did the initial thing about, all right, let's bring the economy down and ensure the
flatten the curve.
And then, though, as we got into it and we got into the science of it, he found out, wait a minute now, shutting down the economy isn't the way to go.
So no, he did that once and he didn't do it again.
Yeah.
And he left it to the governors.
He left it up.
Right.
Which is the constitutional response.
What brings us back to where we started the show today is that they said they figured out the only way that they could win the election and stop Donald Trump is a bunch of criminal activity. I believe that's where we are. And that's where we're starting to see this evidence come forward.
Yeah.
Can I play? Do we have time before the break?
Let me hasten to say that's your opinion based on the information that's been available to you.
Available so far.
We don't have any courtroom proof.
No,
right.
Not yet. However,
this is an opinion based on circumstantial evidence that you've seen.
That we've seen. Also, part of that evidence is President Trump got 11 million votes more this time around than in 2016. 11 million.
11 million more votes and you lose.
Yes.
But you got to say, look what he's up against. A man of word and inspiration that has
a veritable dynamo.
That has not been on the American scene since Reagan.
Yes.
I mean, look what he was up against. Hey, so you wanted to play a clip? How long is the clip?
This is only 23 seconds long.
Okay, we got time. Hold the break.
What are we about to hear? This is a postal worker. All right, this postal worker has come forward saying, you know, back just before the election in October, driving this truck, I had 24 pallets of ballots. And I drove them from New York to Pennsylvania. All right, here's what he had to say. It's cut number 3.
I can tell you I took 24 pallets from Bethpage, New York to Lancaster.
These were Pennsylvania ballots you were bringing in from New York? What was the date of that?
This happened on October 21st. Now, I picked them up in Bethpage, New York, drove them to Harrisburg, and then from Harrisburg I drove them to Lancaster, dropped the trailer in Lancaster, dropped my truck off, and went home.
Yeah, and what we didn't have in that clip is when he went back to pick up the trailer the next morning, the trailer was gone.
Stolen?
It was gone. It wasn't there. So the indication is from this is that those almost 300,000 ballots went somewhere. They came in from New York to Pennsylvania, absentee ballots, and then they disappear. Where did they go?
Do you know if they were ballots that were already filled out?
That would be the indication.
Yeah, because these were mail-in ballots.
Yes.
What are they doing in New York?
Well, it must have gone to some sort of central post office facility. That's the only thing I can think of.
Well, now, sometimes mail goes out of state. I know here in Tupelo, all our mail goes to Memphis.
Right.
You can be mailing somebody across the street from you.
Yes.
And it has to go through Memphis, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that does happen, that kind of thing.
But the driver is saying, my trailer disappeared.
It sounds like well, there you go. Explain that one.
Right.
We'll be back in, we got some good stuff coming up. Straight ahead.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Jan Markell of Understanding the Times Radio.
Was the 2020 election the culmination of the Marxist 100-year strategy to take over America? And will they now be successful? You know, the Bible says we have global government coming.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News. Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Every American ought to visit George Washington's Mount Vernon estate south of Washington, D.C. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to be going to Mount Vernon on one of our spiritual heritage tours coming up in June and September 2021. Wanted to let you know about these tours already because they will fill up quick. So, for all the information, go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com, spiritualheritagetours.com. We're going to be going to Yorktown, Jamestown, and Williamsburg as well on a separate trip. So much rich American history there to be experienced. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation is a nationally noted historian, and he's going to be with us along the way. spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Feeling stuck? At Liberty University, we know you've waited long enough to move forward. So we're making sure the resilient career you want is closer than you think. Choose from more than 450 degrees, 100% online, for one of the lowest tuition rates in the nation. We've kept it the same for 5 years and counting, and we'll give you college credit for your life experience so you can save time and money. Stop feeling stuck and start moving toward the future you want with a school you can trust. Learn more by texting degree to 49595. That's degree to 49595.
Another iconic brand has fallen to the cancel culture mob, Mutual of Omaha. The insurance people announced they will abandon their longtime logo to address racial equality and social justice concerns. The head of a Native American chief had been the logo of the company for 70 years. James Blackledge, the chief executive officer, told Omaha.com the chief was a symbol of strength and respect, but the insurance company was using a symbol from another culture, and that was not theirs. So their new logo is a lion, a nod to the company's longtime sponsorship of Wild Kingdom. Remember Marlon Perkins, Jim Fowler? The logo features a lion gazing forward to evoke the company's role in looking out on the horizon. Mutual of Omaha also says the lion symbolizes safety for their customers. Well, wait a minute. Lions are carnivores. They eat humans. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Conspiracy Issues here on American Family Radio. We've changed the name of the show here. We'll be covering this half hour, Bigfoot, Loch Ness.
Area 51.
And Area 51.
All your answers right here.
Right here. Okay. So we're going to, we got a good half hour for you. You're going to have to pay attention now. Sit up straight and pay attention, as my teacher used to say. And I would respond, geometry ain't my thing. So anyway, we got a lot to talk about and discuss. Fred is with me. Ed is with me. Abraham Hamilton III, a.k.a. Abe, is in studio with us. Brother Abe, how you doing?
Doing well. Good morning, gentlemen.
If you want more of Abe, tune in each afternoon at 5 to 6 o'clock Central Time right here on American Family Radio for the Hamilton Corner. Joining us also on the phone, I don't know where this world traveler is, David Barton. He travels all over the place. David, from founder of Wall Builders. How you doing, brother? Are you in Texas?
Right now, on our way to Georgia to do a bunch of meetings there for that runoff election.
You're moving to Georgia so you can vote? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I'm definitely moving to Georgia to vote. Yeah,
that's 30 days.
I want to get thrown in jail, and Brad Raffensperger has made clear he's going to throw anybody in jail who does that. So I'm going there so I can enjoy the jail in Georgia.
Yeah. So you're en route from Texas to Georgia?
Yeah, we'll be headed out shortly.
Okay.
We've got actually a couple of weeks there. I'm doing pastors, doing churches, doing rallies all over Georgia. So.
Yeah. Okay, just one quick question about travel. Do you know how many miles you've traveled in your career?
Well, on American Airlines, they just notified me that I've gone 7 million miles on American. So
wow.
That's somewhere around 200 times around the world, except all of that's in America. So
hey, man, you like me, don't you? I got 13 family members. We want to go to Cancun in the summer, and you got all those free miles you'll never use. So just think about the Wildmans, okay?
I love it.
Okay, all right.
7 million.
That's 7 million miles.
That's crazy.
Wow.
Okay, David, give us an overview, if you would. I know that's a broad question. Give us an overview of where you think the situation is regarding the president and potential fraud that might overturn the election.
I think yesterday was kind of a turning point in what's happening in the cases. And let me give maybe a 30,000 foot view first. There are two tracks that the president's legal teams are working down. There's a track one that is just strictly constitutional issues. There are three things. Let me back up further. What they're after is getting the case to the Supreme Court, having the Supreme Court accept it, all you there. So they don't care if they're losing cases lower level. They're not putting a heck of a lot of attention on that. What they want is those cases to move as quickly as possible to the Supreme Court, because that's where it's ultimately going to end. One side or the other is going to keep appealing until it gets there. So what they have is there's three arguments that are likely to have merit at the Supreme Court. One of them is much harder to prove than the other two. The first argument is likely to have, or the first two, and this is the first track the legal team is moving on, is equal protection arguments and also Article 1, Section 4 arguments on where it says that for election laws, the legislature of the state thereof shall make the laws. So election laws are made only by the legislature, nobody else. What they have in Pennsylvania, and 2 days ago when the committee in Pennsylvania, Legislative Committee, 38 legislators, introduced their resolution calling on Congress to call that the election disputed in Pennsylvania, they laid out three things, and this is the base of the Trump team's arguments, even though this did come not from the Trump team, it came from the legislature. This is still what they're arguing. And so those arguments are real simple. On the 17th of September, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court changed the deadline by which mail ballots could come in. That was not the legislature. The Supreme Court did it. On October the 23rd, the Secretary of the Commonwealth said we don't need signatures on mail-in ballots to be authenticated. You can do it without authentication. And the third thing was on November the 2nd, the Secretary of the Commonwealth said that if there are certain ballots that have defects, you can help cure those or correct those ballots. Again, that was not the legislature. So what happens is the law in Pennsylvania says that you have to have all mail-in ballots at 8 o'clock p.m. on Election Day, and you have to have the signatures verified, and you can't cure defective ballots. So those three things are in the law. People change the law other than the legislature. That's their first point of contention. Nobody can change the law but the legislature. The second point of contention they have, this is 67 counties in Pennsylvania. Sixty of them are red, and seven of them are blue. In the blue counties, the election officials actually called the mail-in ballot people and said, your ballot is defective. You need to come down here and get it fixed. They allowed them to cure their ballots. In the 60 red counties, they did not allow Republicans to cure their ballots. So that's an equal protection issue. And 20 years ago in Bush v. Gore, that was the issue that the Supreme Court decided on, was you can't have hanging chad in some county and not have hanging chad in the others. You got to do it. Everybody's the same. Everybody treated equal. So that's what this is Supreme Court right now. That's already there. That's what they're waiting to hear if the Supreme Court's going to take that. The other issue that is going to the court is a much slower track. Now, this is a fast track, I just told you, because you're challenging things that happen according to state law. But the next one that's happening is being raised from scratch. It's just you have no law that you're challenging. You're just filing the case. And this is what Sidney Powell is doing with fraud. Fraud doesn't necessarily, you don't point to a law and say, this law is broken. You say, here's a lot of fraud. We'll prove it. So she's got thousands of affidavits, and the claim has been made by Tucker Carlson and others. Where's your proof? I've got affidavits. I want to see your proof. Well, yesterday they started with the proof. So there's three cases going. There's one in Wisconsin. There's one in Georgia, and there's one in Nevada. And in those cases, Sydney's got two of them. She's got the we'll come back to that later, but in Nevada, what's really interesting is the judge said, okay, the Trump team can depose 15 witnesses, and that means you got to get me evidence. You can use your affidavits, but you go talk to those witnesses. You get sworn statements, and the other side gets to cross-examine them. So now, starting yesterday, we're now getting into evidence. It doesn't matter what the claims are anymore. It doesn't matter what the spikes look like. It doesn't matter what the math guys say. Now we're down to evidence. And so that started in Nevada yesterday. It will start Friday in Georgia. The federal judge in Georgia has told the election officials in three counties, you cannot wipe the machines. You cannot take the votes off the machines for the recount. You leave them alone. We're going to have outside forensic experts come in and examine those machines. This is evidence. If there is fraud in the machines, like we've been claiming from the affidavits, we're now going to have experts go through those machines and find if there's fraud there. And two of the three counties are around Atlanta, and that's where a lot of the fraud is claimed. So that's evidence. The third case in Wisconsin, there is a former judge up there who is the Trump attorney, and they've just gone through the recount. And he said, as we went through the recount, we saw a lot of specific things that were really red flags to us. And so we now have filed a lawsuit to go back on those specific things that we saw during the recount. So this is, again, evidence-based. So this is the first time that the Trump team is really getting into evidence as opposed to having claims and having affidavits. Affidavits are nice claims, but I've read some of the affidavits, and I would dismiss them. Just because a Democrat election official mistreated me doesn't mean that was fraud. Show me fraud. And so that's what's going to happen now, and I'm really excited about this part of the case. It's happening much faster than they thought it would. This takes a lot longer to get to the court, but it's moving quickly enough that it might get there before all the inauguration stuff is supposed to happen, and that's important.
David, this is Abe here. One of the things I raised, and I said this on my program last night, having practiced criminal trial law for as long as I have, you argue the law if the law is on your side, you argue the facts are on your side. As defense attorneys, when you have neither law or the facts on your side, your job then is to try to muddy the waters as much as possible to make it unclear. What I have found is a remarkable lack of curiosity in the mainstream media that refuses to do what you just did, to separate the constitutional challenges from the overt assertions of fraud. I've continually seen efforts to lump everything into one category and to say that all of these things are in the same category. Do you see a concerted effort to try to perpetuate confusion in the minds of the American people by refusal to distinguish constitutional lawful challenges from assertions of digital fraud with the voting machine situation?
Well, you talk to the media. I think the answer to that, I'm going to answer that question by answering a different question. We saw just a few days ago, the Media Research Center did some polling in the battleground states, six of those battleground states. And they polled only Democrat registered voters who voted in the election. And they asked them about eight media stories that were significant stories. You know, Hunter Biden story was significant, but it was not covered in the mainstream media. The claim of the Biden staffer that Biden sexually assaulted her was significant, not covered in the media. The turnaround in the economy in the third quarter, significant, not covered in the media. Went through eight stories like that. And they asked the Democrat voters who already voted for Biden, and they asked them if they'd heard those eight stories, and they had not heard those eight stories. And they said, if you had heard any one of those eight stories, would it have changed your vote? 17% of Biden voters said if they had heard any of those eight stories, they would not have voted for Biden. Now, 17%, you wouldn't need a recount on anything if the media had done any of its job on what they should have been doing in reporting the news. They covered up, and they didn't. As a matter of fact, just the Hunter Biden story, 9.4% of Democrats said they would not have voted for Biden if they'd even heard the Hunter Biden story. So asking about whether the media is covering the constitutional law versus the other aspects? No, they're not. They're not even asking curious questions that any American just should be curious about. I'm curious about the water leak that happened, and no plumber came, no bill came, everybody left. I'm curious why that is. I'm curious why that in Detroit they boarded up the windows and wouldn't let anybody even watch from the outside as they're doing the recount. I'm curious as to why you would board up windows. Maybe you don't like Republicans. Maybe you feel like they're harassing you. Maybe you want them out of the room. But why would you board up the windows? I mean, there's a lot of questions that anybody that is even halfway curious or halfway doing their media job should be asking. And they weren't asking those questions because they don't want to report those stories in the same way they didn't want to report those eight big stories that happened in the election. So the media just, it really doesn't exist much anymore as an institution. That is now an apologetic side or an apologetics arm for their candidate, and that's what they're really doing. They're evangelists for their candidate. They're no longer news reporters.
With the Hunter Biden story that it first appeared in the New York Post, which is the fourth largest newspaper in America, about his laptop that was left at that computer repair shop that he never picked up and then was turned over to the FBI, and on that laptop was a lot of emails about his business transactions in China. And on one, and the, so I just want, I don't want to go into that except to say this. Facebook said they were going to stop it. I don't know what they call it, where they thwart it from going out.
Well, they banned all stories. Mm-hmm. You couldn't share it.
Twitter, same mm-hmm. thing. Twitter and Facebook ganged up to say, we're not letting this New York Post story about Hunter Biden get out to people that get our news because it could hurt. They said it was undocumented. It's just, excuse me, laugh out loud. I know it's not funny, but they ran a story just a few months earlier about Donald Trump's taxes by anonymous sources. Nobody blocked that because right. It was undocumented or unverified. So, in fact, the Twitter chairman admitted that they did the wrong thing there. Now, it didn't help after the fact, but Jack Dorsey said we shouldn't have censored that. But they did.
Yeah.
But to David's point, had that story gotten out under the normal, not to mention ABC, CBS, NBC, New York Post, Washington Times, had that story got out like normal news does, had it been Don Jr. Right. With a laptop from hell, as it was called, then it would have been 24/7 wall-to-wall news, and you can bet your bottom dollar Facebook or YouTube would not have censored it had right. It been a story about Don Jr.'s laptop that he left, which had his daddy's business dealings with communist China. Hmm. Go, his dad a part of his business dealings, not to mention all the stuff he was involved in, Hunter Biden, with the Ukraine gas company, which he had no experience with, and he's getting $70,000 or whatever it is a month to serve on their board. I mean, and there's, as David said, and as Abe said, no curiosity from any in the media about a scandal that would make Watergate look like, you know, a Sunday afternoon picnic.
Right.
So I just wanted to get that off my chest, and I did. Now,
Jim, let me throw something in interesting, just personal and from the last two or three days.
Go ahead.
We've seen how that the big tech media has really kind of shut things down. We're seeing people, they definitely moved off of Fox. Fox went from 14.1 million viewers to 1.7 million viewers within only 3 days. Newsmax has picked up nearly 2 million apps on it. The Epic Times is now the number one app on newspapers, and et cetera. So we're seeing people switch their viewing habits on the conservative side. Now, I do obviously a lot of presentations. We write a lot of history books. We wrote one recently, The American Story, and we're working on the sequel to that, which is kind of the 19th and 20th century kind of stuff. So I'm working on writing stories, and I'm looking up a lot of Christian heroes, like a guy named John Clum, who was an Indian agent who really was really great on pro-Native American stuff, not the way Andrew Jackson was. We've got people like Cecil B. DeMille, the big producer in Hollywood who wanted to do Christian films and did stuff like Ten Commandments, etc. So I'm looking up to find information on Cecil B. DeMille as a Christian. And on my normal search engine that I often use, Bing, I cannot get an article to pop up that Cecil B. DeMille was a Christian, even though they put up 4,000 Ten Commandment monuments across the country in the 1950s. I can't get any articles on that. So I go to a different search service. I just went to DuckDuckGo, and all of a sudden, dozens of articles pop up on Cecil B. DeMille, a Christian. So I tried John Klum, a Christian Indian agent. Wouldn't pop up on Bing, but it would pop up on other search services. And so I was talking to Glenn Beck about this because he's got the Blaze, and they've really taken off like Epic and Newsmax and these guys. And he says that they have now been so – and when I type in an exact article title off the Blaze, I just did it to check. I just took one of their article titles, a long title, typed it in. Bing would not even bring up the Blaze website. It was not even an option for me when I type in the title off the Blaze. And so I was talking to Beck, and he told me that they're down 25 million page views a day. And so they're looking at filing suit against the big tech guys because they won't even let you search, mm-hmm. even if you want to go there, unless you type in the specific URL, you can't get there. So it's not even that they're just kind of shutting down the Trump stuff. They're just shutting down Christian stuff, well, and they're shutting down conservative stuff. It's just amazing what's happening right now.
By the way, we got a story coming up next half hour with Steve about President Trump has issued an ultimatum. He said if these big tech companies like Facebook and Twitter, do you have that story, Fred?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, let me just tell you, folks, we're talking to Bigfoot himself. so you don't tell me we don't go right to the source. No, talking to our David Barton, founder of Wall Builders, and David's talking to us about his thoughts and his research, what's happening around the country with respect to the fraud and the allegations that are out there about misconduct and the proof that's out there about, what do you call them, irregularities, that kind of thing, statistical impossibilities as it relates to the presidential election. I'm Tim Wildman with Fred Jackson, Ed Battagliano, Abe Hamilton. And do you have that story I was just referring to? Can you stay with us another 8 minutes, David? You got to go.
You bet.
Go for it.
Last night, the president tweeted out that he'll veto the National Defense Authorization Act unless Congress repeals Section 230 of the 1996 Communications Decency Act, which critics say unfairly shields Facebook, Twitter. Basically,
this guy's got. This guy's got, can I say the word guts here?
Courage.
Courage.
Yeah. Courage.
I did say guts, but
never stop
guts
fighting.
Works. Guts works.
I'm talking about President Trump. He laid down the ultimatum to what David's just talking about, this bias, mm-hmm. this political agenda of the big social media giants. The president says, okay, I can do something about this, and so can Congress. And what's he said?
Repeal Section 230.
What does that do?
Which shields these Facebook, Twitter from liability over items posted. So all of a sudden, they have to become a publication, mm-hmm. and they would be subject to libel laws, which they are not now.
Which, to summarize,
should they be Abe?
Because of their activity, yes.
Yes.
Earlier on in the process, the major tech companies, including the social media giants, secured Section 230 protection because they presented themselves to Congress as neutral platforms for people to share their ideas. Yeah. As a platform, they're not putting their thumb on one side of the scale or the other in terms of what ideas are shared. They're simply saying, we created a platform, guys, share what you want to share. But what's happening in practice, that they're influencing what is shared on their platforms, the Hunter Biden laptop story is a great example. Mm-hmm. They're saying that we will not allow you to have this information. Well, if you're going to do that, and this has been my contention all along, then you should be held responsible, just like any publisher of material, for making editorial decisions as to what ideas you will allow to be shared. Just to make a simple distinction, the application of libel laws is what enabled Nick Sandman to sue The Washington Post and the other news publishers, CNN and others, because of their defamatory display of him. That's what allowed them to sue. If those publications had 230 protections, there would be no Nick Sandman lawsuit.
Right.
And so that is the significance of 230, Section 230 being repealed.
But the president's saying, Fred, he's going to veto a major piece of legislation
mm-hmm.
if the Congress doesn't do something about this.
That's right.
And you know what? He'll do it.
Yes.
Because – because that's just the way he plays.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't find any other Republican, with the possible exception of Ted Cruz, in my opinion, mm-hmm. that would be so bold.
No.
Right? But what does he have to lose?
That's right.
Huh?
I have a question I'd like to ask David and our Abe. All right, the electors meet on December the 14th. All right?
And Norm, David, go first and then Abe.
All right. They meet on December the 14th. They'll make their decision. They'll do their count of electors for president and vice president. How does that impact if they go ahead and they say Joe Biden's going to be the next president, Kamala Harris, the vice president? How does that impact then court decisions that may be in Trump's favor after that date? Does it have any effect on the outcome of the election? Go ahead, David.
Yeah, I think the answer to that is yes and no. Court decisions will impact what happens in the legislative side more than the legislative side impacts what happens on the court side. And let me take you to what happens. There are various electoral college laws been passed. The one that's passed in 1887 is an extremely badly written law. Everybody on both sides agrees that. It's vague language. It's confusing language. It can contradict itself at times. But it's the one that says you're going to meet on the 14th of December to certify the slates of electors. Now, technically, is a better way to say it rather than technically. Theoretically, what we think that means under the law, which really hasn't happened much, is that, well, it has happened, but the challenges haven't happened much, is when you get together, you vote on each state in a joint session of the House and Senate. They'll get together. Each state will say, all right, do we certify the results from Texas, from Oklahoma, from et cetera? And they go through, and if they get to, like, Pennsylvania, and if you have a U.S. senator from Pennsylvania and a U.S. House member from Pennsylvania say, hey, we object to certifying these results. That's our state. We object. At that point, the Congress has to go back into separate chambers, and they have to debate whether to certify that ballot. And so the U.S. Senate would vote whether to certify, and because it's Republican, they might say, hey, we think there is a lot of fraud that happened in Pennsylvania, and we're not certifying. And then the House would look at it, and they would say, well, we think it's great. We think the results are great, so they'll certify. So you have the House and the Senate who have opposite views on whether the electors should be certified. And then at that point, when you have that, this is where experts can't agree on the law. They think that the law says that if one side objects and one body holds that objection up, then you can't certify those electors. Some people think that both bodies have to object, and if both bodies object, then you can't hold it up. So what would cause the legislature, for example, from Pennsylvania to object? Right now, out of the 102 Republican legislators in Pennsylvania, 38 are objecting. They've introduced the resolution. The other guys, particularly those in the suburbs around Philadelphia that are Republicans, say, we're not going to contradict the vote of the people. If the vote of the people is Biden as the winner, we're not going to go against that. Well, what if that's not the accurate vote? So at this point, the Republicans in Pennsylvania are not willing to contest the election, nor in Michigan, nor in Nevada, nor elsewhere. The Arizona, same thing. The Speaker, the Republican leadership in Arizona won't contest the election. So probably their congressman won't. But let's say that one of these cases comes out and you now get evidence that fraud did happen in Nevada or that fraud did happen in Atlanta, that they do a forensic analysis there in that federal case.
You got 30 seconds.
Georgia.
30 seconds, Dave.
Okay, yeah, to get analysis. Then now you're going to see different things happen on Congress. So it's going to be more that the court decisions are going to affect what happens in certification on the process than the other way around. But that there's a lot left to come, including what's called the whole electors clause in the Constitution, which may also be a big debate in Congress as well. So there's a lot of drama yet to come.
Hey, David, thanks so much, my brother, for your time. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, guys.
Okay.
Bless y'all.
Okay, bye-bye. Talk to you later. Safe travels. I think I need to call him or text him about those free tickets I want from
I think you're going to have to press your case.
He's got a lot. I mean, he's not going to miss
7 million miles.
He's not going to miss them. We'll be back in 5 minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.